Well, good day, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and you gators and grannies to the Sunday afternoon edition of The Big Puzzle. I'm Barry Prince, coming to you live from my residence here in northern British Columbia through the facilities of People's Internet Radio, also being simulcast on shakeandwakeradio.com. We are viewer-funded stations, guys, so if you like what's going on over here and you like the content, please push the donation button. I know we could use any help we can get. Today, I'm joined by Frank Vaughn, and I'm opening up the calls, the show two calls. Calling numbers today are 269-409-1950, 269-409-1950 on the phone, or you can Skype Super Big Bad Man 1, and Stephen, my producer, will accept the call, and you can join the call. I know there's going to be a few people today said they're going to call in, so we would like to hear from you and have your opinions heard. Welcome to the show, Frank, and I know there's a million things, like we said, we could talk about prior to the start of the show. I really don't even know where to start these days. The going-ons inside our government is really, really hard to keep up with, but none of it's good, of course. We know that. Welcome to the show, Frank.
Well, thank you, Barry, and as you say, there are a lot of issues facing Canada, but also just facing sovereignty in general. I think it goes beyond the notion of Canada, and it goes to the individual character of nations around the world and whether or not we're going to retain them through the next century. So it is a broad batch of subjects that you can kind of get into there, but the one sort of principal thing that we have to really wake up to is the infection of the United Nations into the decision-making processes of our respective nations, including Canada. And it's a progress that's been made pretty much uninterrupted for 50 years, regardless of which government was in power. And we need to start paying attention to the details, the actual details, and do so in a nonpartisan way, in a sort of whole picture way, because if we're only looking at half the picture, we're missing the picture. And that's the danger.
Yeah, we are very, right now, the way I see Canada, we're kind of at a tipping point right now, Frank, because if things keep going on the way they are right now for the next 4 years, our country really is going to be in a lot of trouble, if it's not in a lot of trouble already. But I still believe we have the window of opportunity to turn this around, but it's really going to take an effort from the Canadian people to address the corruption we see in the government, and the United Nations, of course, plays right into that. I've done quite a bit of studying into the United Nations over the last 3-4 years, and anybody who thinks that the United Nations is a good organization hasn't done any research into the United Nations at all, or the League of Nations prior to World War II and how it all came about and what their agenda is. And now we're seeing it being welcomed, embraced, and absolutely brought into Canada by our sitting Prime Minister. He's just carrying on the agenda. Like you said, this has been going on for many, many, many years, but we see it ramping up right now.
Yeah, I mean, the current Prime Minister, he's very naked. You and I were talking a little bit earlier on just about Trudeau and his administration, if you can call it that. And, one of the things I said to you is if you had to come up with something nice to say or something positive to say about everybody, about the only thing that I could come up with to say positive about Justin Trudeau is that his style of governance leaves nothing to the imagination. He's a far leftist, and that's how he governs. And the institutions and the things that he wants to create and the direction he's trying to push Canada into, which is in the direction of a post-national state, at the very least, he's right out in the open about the fact that he wants to destroy the very fabric of our country. And that's about as far as you can go. There really hasn't been, and I mean, it's a cumulative process. Starting a little bit under Diefenbaker, accelerating under his father, Pierre Trudeau, whose programs and debt expansion has cost the Canadian taxpayer over $1 trillion in interest just from his experiment in governance. And moving forward throughout the years until today, we are in a state of an accelerated decline. And I don't think a lot of mainstream Canada really grasps the place that we're entering into now in terms of the erosion of our statehood, the erosion of our sovereignty, and the lack of concern in the political class for it. They all seem to be relatively comfortable with the deconstruction of our sovereignty. I'm not, and the Canadian people shouldn't be either.
Right. I couldn't agree with you more, Frank, when you said that the gist or the majority of Canadian population really doesn't understand the danger we're in right now. And of course, they're never going to hear the real stories through the corporate state broadcasting systems we have in Canada. And right now, like I said, we are in a dangerous time. I never thought in my lifetime I would see the country in the state it is right now. And I would see the dangers I see right now representing the future of this country. Gary Gables joined us. Gary, welcome to the show.
Hello, Mr. Barry Prince. Hello, Mr. Franklin.
Hello, Mr. Snailman.
It's funny that you mentioned that, what you guys were just talking about. I just got off an interesting call with a CBC reporter, one of the executive editors, and he started off very polite, but when questioned on a couple of things that I'll speak to you guys about a little bit later, he just went absolutely sideways. They don't want folks to be paying attention politically. They want to be able to do these things, take us into that post-national status, and just have everybody think, oh, it's just business as usual. And people absolutely do need to be worried. They do need to be concerned. And they need to look at the policies of the people that are elected to get us back on track, because it's going to affect you, but it's going to affect your kids and your grandkids.
Yeah, if we get that far.
Yeah.
I don't see that myself, buddy. I see us at a real tipping point right now. And yeah, the good thing I do see, though, is an amazing waking in Canada right now. So time to put the pedal down.
I think the challenge of waking up the masses and getting people out of their comfort zones, the biggest thing that opposes us is the comfort of the, let's say, an average citizen. People are pretty comfortable. They're overtaxed, but they never have to feel the pain of, most people lose that taxation automatically off their paycheck. So they don't actually ever have to hold on to it and give it away. Food is cheap and readily accessible, even though some of it might be terrible for you. Like, people aren't hungry. They're not poor. They're divided by design so that they're not civically engaged. The time is taken up with jobs and activities and all these different distractions, which can be good in and of themselves. But if you separate the distractions from civic duty and you don't have any obligation towards your role as a civilian, getting involved in municipal government, getting involved in harassing your MP when they're doing something stupid, or any of the other layers of government, or things that you can wield an incredible amount of influence. And this is what people don't understand, especially in modern times, with the ability and the magic that the internet gives us. We can wield an influence far beyond our station. And I've seen that work in my life on a small scale and on a larger scale. As I've said before, I'm just a garlic farmer in Eastern Ontario. At least that's what I've been to this point. I am not paid by George Soros. I'm not paid by Justin Trudeau, and I'm not paid by any of the other people that I'm accused of being paid by. I'm just some guy who thinks. I've managed to carve out for myself a place where I can have conversations with politicians or with influence makers around the country and feel like I'm actually contributing to change. And I don't think that's beyond anybody's ability to do, but we've become disconnected via our comfort from the sense of obligation to civic duty. And that's the biggest challenge to waking up people and getting them to see what's happening around them.
I agree with you 100%. What do you think, Gary?
Well, I have an issue with, I mean, you know me well enough to know where my concerns lay. Both of these do, both you and Frank. I'm a big guy on accountability. And I've said it more than once that we are where we are today in Canada because of that lack of accountability, that lack of responsibility. Now, Frank just mentioned something about how people accuse him of being this or paid by so-and-so or this, that, and the next thing. Mm-hmm. And it absolutely boggles my mind that somebody like AR could sit there and spew that with no consequences, with no concept of the realities, and do so without any kind of evidence for it. She claims that he's being paid out of that $600 million, you know, windfall to the MSM. Well, Frank's not MSM. He certainly didn't get any of that. I mean, if he did, that guy better be taking me for dinner. You know what I mean? I want some of that. But the reality is that's just not the case. And the fact
that there's no money.
Just like the liberals that they're accusing others of being, is the problem.
Of course.
You know,
you always deflect the deflect it away from yourself by accusing the enemy or your opposition of doing exactly what you're doing. You see it every day.
Which is a Marxist concept. Accuse them of one thing that you're doing and blame it on them. You know,
exactly.
And they wonder why things are the way they are. So it's not about
what you look at.
In this day and age, if you're not woken up and you're an adult, you need to hang your head in shame because the information is out there. And there's enough people talking about it. The reality is there's no accountability and no responsibility. People don't want to participate because participating means sacrificing. Sacrificing is discomfort. Discomfort sucks. But if you absolutely don't think it's going to get worse, folks, guess what?
We're only seeing the beginning. Go ahead, Frank.
Well, no, and I just think you see it on both the left and right. I'm not entirely sure who AR is. I get a lot of email from them, but I'm not entirely sure who that is. But you see the tactic deployed, whether it's on the right or on the left, if there is a right and left when you're comparing the two forces, you see this labeling, and you also see this basic denial of reality. Like, you just have to look at the comments on my Facebook page. Most days, you'll find somebody there that's just spewing ignorance. They're name calling like children. They're not really dealing with the issues, and they're not dealing with history. And when you show them something very firm, whether it's about Trudeau or whether it's about the history of, you know, Stephen Harper's legacy and what he left on the table, you give them dates, you give them the documents, you give them the history, and they come back with the phrase, "I refuse to believe," and you're a liberal. And it's like, well, reality doesn't care what you believe. Reality just is reality. And if your worldview isn't based on all of reality's metrics, it's not a viable worldview. And if you have to insult your way out of a corner with the same labels that the other side, whether you're on the right or left, the other side is doing the exact same thing. And you mentioned Marxism, and that's how Marxism thrives, by labeling, by slotting, by basically targeting people for destruction using verbiage, but not actually dealing with the details, not actually dealing with the policies, not actually dealing with the reality of things. And come hell or high water, whether or not I sink or swim, one of the things I'd like to be committed to and pursue in my work, which is just starting, is this dedication to just what is, in a nonpartisan way, to the extent of, you know, I want a dedication to the truth. I want a dedication to reality, because if we can start having civil conversations about our disagreements without resorting to labels, that's the first step back from the precipice, when we can start to respect each other again, and we can start to respect facts and reality.
We're not there yet, because right now you have people that do step up, whether it be the Barry Princes or the Kevin J. Johnsons and other people like that, you know, like yourself. And people are still in this other mode where they want to attack, they want to criticize, and they want to do that because that's the only thing they have left to make them feel like they're participating, when they're actually not. I just got a text message, and it was a question to ask you, Mr. Franklin, if you think that Mad Max could be a globalist by chance.
I don't see it. I just don't see it, and I've explained to you some of the history that's there.
I know.
And yeah. I believe firmly that he's a nationalist, and the degree of where he wants to take it is left to be decided. I mean, he has a long-standing history. If you go to his YouTube channel and you look at his stuff from 2007 and 2008, which was the last time he fell out of favor with the Conservative Party, and exercised a measure of freedom in terms of what he could say, because he just quite frankly didn't care, because he thought his career prospects were going down the tube, so he could revert back to his own beliefs. Because the thing about Max, when he was in the CPC, and this is interesting, is that he tried to work to change the CPC from within the CPC. And you can agree with that strategy, or you can disagree with that strategy, but you can't do both at the same time. While he was there, he tried to work with it, and he was shut down, not just in 2016, but in so many different instances previously, where he was told, look, you're going to do something, or you're going to be thrown out of this party. There's going to be consequences for you. So people often cite the fact that he stood up in Parliament and said that he supported supply management. Well, he was told to do that. As a minister, I think he was the Minister of Industry at the time, he was told, you're going to do this, you're going to lose your cabinet position, your position within the party. So he folded. And when he did it, the whole parliament on the conservative side basically chuckled and laughed because they knew that he personally didn't support that position. And he's been clear on that. So building on that, there's a long history there. Like, I don't just jump in with people because I feel like it's a good thing or it's the hip thing to do. Jeez, if I thought it was hip and the good thing to do, I probably would have just stuck with the CPC and that nominal position because it's popular. The PPC is not popular right now. It's not popular for a lot of reasons. And I don't care, frankly, if it is. To me, since I first encountered Max something like 3 years ago when he was actually running for the leadership, I read his platform. I really liked what was in it. I really liked what he had to say when I went and met him the first couple times at rallies and stuff. And then the whole leadership fiasco happened. And if you can't see that the leadership of vote was the most crooked thing that's happened in recent Canadian political memory, there's not much I can do for you there either. But in that intervening time, what has happened? Sounds like
Barry,
a car running or something.
Barry,
anyway, in that intervening time, essentially, I got to know him at different events when he was the Conservative Party pariah. And he's consistent. So I don't believe he's a globalist. He's the only politician that has a firm stance against the United Nations and has a firm stance about
Canadian identity and
Canadian nationalism.
United Nations Mass Immigration Pact.
Barry.
Jürgen Vollroth has joined us.
Barry.
Also.
Barry. Yes, one sir? Of you two has your automatically adjusted microphone ticked. Somebody's got a freight train in the background. There's too much noise.
Yeah, there's a freight train happening.
I don't know where that's coming from. Who's got the freight train going on in their living room?
One of you two.
I think it might be Jürgen because it came on as soon as he came on.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jürgen, you got some background noise going?
Sorry,
welcome
guys.
To the show, by the way.
Sorry, guys. Yeah, hey.
It's okay. It was teaching me how to think on my feet with a big loud noise in my ear. I don't think I did a good job.
I heard everything you said, Frank, and I don't think anybody there missed anything. Is that better now?
Yeah.
No.
Much better.
Yeah, that's
much better.
Hey, Jürgen, welcome to the show. And Jürgen made a speech yesterday, guys, and I want you to listen to a few things that have happened to him since he made that speech. Welcome to the show, Jürgen.
Well, thanks a lot, Barry. It's a pleasure to be with you and with Frank. Thanks a lot. I appreciate the work that both you guys do. It's important that we all join our forces together in this massive movement to try to change the mess that we're all in. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Agreed, Jürgen. It's nice to hear your voice.
Nice to see you, too.
Yeah. Awesome. But Jürgen made a speech yesterday. How many hits have you had on that, Jürgen?
I just left a page, and it was at 77,000 hits.
Oh, congrats.
And that's
since
in 22
when?
Hours. It's not even 24 hours yet. And, 77,000 hits.
Wow.
It's absolutely incredible. I was blown away. It was an opportunity to speak at the Medicine Hat rally yesterday. I confronted the organizers. They kind of, the people in the crowd, I think, kind of got a kick out of me because I was wearing my red hat that said make Trudeau a drama teacher again, and amongst all the signs and everything, you know, my being the only one with that hat and being 6'4", I think I kind of stood out a bit. And I am I have a lot of experience at rallies, so I went up and down and I started chants like hey hey ho ho, Justin Trudeau has to go. There was a little bit of hesitation at that one at the start. But then we sang the national anthem. I got to lead that. The organizers came up to me and asked me if I'd like to speak a little bit. I was anxious to do so. I was a little bit unprepared, so I dropped an F-bomb, which I really shouldn't have done, I don't think. But anyways, I was very passionate and caught up in the moment. It is what it is, and it happens to have just caught on, and I guess it's gotten viral. My kids are telling me this is viral. When it hits that many hits, we'll probably be at around 80,000 at this point right now. It was a fairly passionate speech. I don't know, Barry, I guess you've seen it by now.
Yeah, no, I absolutely. I listened to it and I've shared it around and I've had great response on it. You had nothing prepared there, Jürgen, and it came right from the heart and right from the hip. And that really was the most important thing about that, because you really kind of said exactly what you feel. And I know a couple F-bombs got dropped, but we'll forgive you for that. So yeah, I posted it on my Facebook pages, guys. Go have a look at Against the Grain Radio and follow what Jürgen's doing. Gary, What do you think? I got to pass this around because there's three of us in here.
I did catch his speech. It was pretty bang on. I liked
it. Hey, Gary.
I'm not even against the F-bomb, but you know me, so I kind of wished it was more. But everything he said was just, it's what people need to start understanding and say it themselves. You know, the more people that get on this page, the idea that you're bringing, you know, Jurgen and Franklin to one show with all the efforts that you're pushing, it's just phenomenal. It has to happen more. People need to see that, you know what, we can hear different messages that are on the same road, the same highway, the same direction, and actually build that momentum that's going to be the thing required to do what we need to do, which is take back our country, take back our politics, take back our voice. You know, it isn't about whether Franklin supports Bernier or not. It's you need to choose. You need to have the courage of your conviction and make a choice and support them and not be afraid.
Well, you also need to know that when you make that choice, it's your choice. And when somebody says to you that when you make a choice and it's not the choice they would make, and that somehow makes you a traitor and a betrayer of the cause, and you hate Canada, or you want Trudeau to come back, that's not the case. Be confident in your choice.
That's right. And I'm okay with Franklin choosing Bernier, even though he's wrong. I'm okay with that, you know, because it shows that he actually has the courage of his conviction.
Mm.
I'd rather trust somebody that's living their belief, living their words, living their deeds.
Well, you know what? I've taken quite a bit of time to look at Maxine's platform, and I've had the pleasure of talking to the gentleman a couple times on the phone, and I got the feeling from the man that he's legitimate. And, you know, me to say that a politician could be any shape or form legitimate would be hard to get that out of my mouth, because we've all seen what politicians have done in the past. We know who is pushing the buttons behind the scenes and how well they're controlled in everything they do. They're just puppets doing what they're told to do. But I got a feeling with Maxine and what I'm seeing right now across the country that Canada really doesn't have any other viable choice. If you study Andrew Scheer and if you like what Trudeau is doing, then I don't know what to say to you. I've looked into Andrew Scheer. I've looked at him a lot, and his words speak for himself. Right now in Canada, until we can actually change the system, because the system actually never has worked for Canadians. Anybody that studies our political system will understand that. Until we can change that right now, I don't see us with any other viable choice. We have to stop the madness going on in our country. And Maxine has said a lot of things that resonate with me.
Absolutely. But here's the thing with Maxine and me. Maxine, it doesn't matter the words he uses right now. Even though he's saying the right things, it's not about the words. It's going to come back to the deeds. He's going to have to follow through and stay steadfast on the direction that he's professing to have any great lasting effect and resonance with other Canadians, including myself. Mm-hmm. So when you say you studied Scheer, I've studied Scheer as well, you know, and that's the whole point, people, is that don't just take this regurgitated stuff from Facebook. Actually look into it and make a decision for yourself. And for me, I'm reserving my opinion or my decision until I see actual factual action. Because if I just went by his words, I couldn't put faith in that.
But he will not be able to actually enforce those actions or bring those actions to fruition unless he has the power to do so. So is that a catch-22?
Well, no. As we get closer to the election, we're going to see his actions come into play. That's okay. What I'm talking about, personally.
Okay, Frank, I'm going to get you to weigh in on that, and then I'm going to get Jurgen to weigh in on that.
Yeah, no, simply put, I mean, there's a consistency there that you can't find with other politicians. Going back to when Donald Trump announced that he was going to run for the Republican primaries, since that point, I've had a lot of different dealings with politicians. And they all have a certain feel to them. They're very slithery. They're really hard to tie down to anything. And ever since I encountered Max Bernier, there's a very consistent difference there. And as I built a relationship with him, on a more personal level, that difference has just come through. And you can see there's only so much action somebody can take when they're not in power. But what he did do, and just one example, and there's other examples of this, but you look at the Global Compact on Migration. we wouldn't even be talking about it if it wasn't for the push that Max Bernier and the PPC and the people in the PPC pushed for that. And there's other people out there, don't get me wrong, but it was a petition that he sponsored, which was written by a couple of Ontario boys. And without that sponsorship, that petition wouldn't have got where it was, got the, I can't remember, something like 100,000 or some odd signatures before it came in. He put the pressure on Andrew Scheer. PPC people put pressure on the CPC. And eventually, they rhetorically folded. I don't believe for a second that Scheer is actually against the Global Compact on Migration, because we have to remember, Stephen Harper gave us Agenda 2030. And Agenda 2030 leads right to the Global Compact on Migration. So Scheer does what Scheer does for optics' sake, because he is a typical politician. And I know Bernier is a career politician as well, although he spent less time in politics than he did in the world of finance or as a lawyer, which is, there's a whole history there of him in the private sector that sort of gets shoved by the wayside for the 12 or 15 years that he's been involved in politics. He will be consistent. And when he, if he manages to get a hold of it, he will do what he says he's going to do. I'm confident of that. And if something changes my confidence, then I'll say that. But I have no reason to believe that he is not genuine. None whatsoever. And I'd say it if I did.
Well, you know, I'm going to add on that. Like I said, I did have a couple conversations with Maxine, and I kind of laid it right out from the hip. I held nothing back in my thoughts about exactly what I see going on in my country. And he acknowledged every one of them and made comments on every one of them. So at this point, like I said, we do not have any other viable choice in Canada as far as I'm concerned. And I'm not, you know, I've always, like I said, in my life been leery of politicians, because like Frank said, they're slithery creatures that really are not really held accountable for their actions. And if Maxime Bernier was to get some power in Canada, we would hold him to the fire. We would hold him to his promises. And everything he says right now makes absolutely logical sense. We do not hear anybody speaking against the United Nations Mass Immigration Pact, except for the progressive conservative government when Maxine brought it to their attention. Of course, they had to jump on the bandwagon to have any kind of credibility with conservative groups. But besides that, I have to agree with Frank at this point that I have no reason to believe the man isn't genuine. All I got to say, who wants to speak next? Jürgen?
Well, let me just... Let me just be the one voice out of the four here, I guess, that is a little bit out of agreement with you in terms of his what he may bring to the table. I understand and I respect everything that you fellows have said. There's no question about that, okay? My biggest thing is that the Maxime Bernier movement is not truly organic. It is not pulling together all the people of this country that bear a sort of patriotic hold on the NDP, Liberals, Green, or whatever party, Conservative, whatever they think they are, as the labels they're put on. So that's my biggest problem. It's not organic in that it's not pulling everyone together. And that's what we truly need. I think that's what Donald Trump did. He pulled the Obama voters together under the umbrella of the right side, right? That's how he managed to win. It was organic. He pulled the left and the right together to win that victory because it was definitely a populist organic movement. That's my biggest fear. Also, my other biggest fear is I'm not a fan of party politics. I think we've got enough friggin' parties in this country, and party politics are too prone to corruption. You have it just doesn't matter. Listen, as far as platforms go, there isn't a platform I've seen that I like better than Maxime Bernier's. I read that and I'm going, holy, this is everything I want. I'm bang on with the program. This is good for Canada. I like it. But I fear it's not going anywhere because it's not that organic thing we need and we want. And here's the biggest thing, and I'm going to get creamed for this, but another fellow from Quebec isn't going down big with Western Canada. I can tell you that right now. That's well, a given. That's going to be a given in any conversation now as we go move forward into this next election. I'll tell you that right now.
Frank?
That's huge. Well, it's huge.
If I can address all three of those things,
yes,
the first point
do.
Being that it's not organic. We know that half of our support comes from traditional conservative circles. Half of our support comes from the left. I recently did a four-way conversation with three other YouTubers, one by the name of Derek Rance, one by the name of Joe Hayes, and one by the name of Kelly Hazleton. And between them all, there's about 13,000 subscribers there. And all three of them voted Trudeau in the last election. And all three of them regret their choice now. And in my ridings where I'm helping organize, I'm surrounded by not just ex-conservatives, but by ex-liberals and ex-NDPers. There's a guy I've argued with for 20 years, by the name, I'm not going to name him because he might not be wanting to be named, but he's an old NDP guy who's voted NDP for as long as I've known him, and I've known him for 20 years. And he shocked me by messaging me one day and saying, yeah, I bought my PPC membership. And I'm like, really? Did you read the platform, man? Like, do you know what you're getting into? And he's like, yeah, I read it. I love it. What do I do next? How do I help organize? So that's number one.
Good. I'm glad to hear that, Frank.
And,
thank you.
No, and it is. I mean, and I understand your concerns, Jürgen. Remind me what your other two concerns were, because I totally got off base there, because they need to be addressed. You listed three things.
Well, the thing was not a big fan of party politics, because party leads to corruption, right?
Yeah. Now, here's the thing about party politics. In Canada, we have a parliamentary democracy based on the European British model, except we treat it like it's a two-party democracy like they have in the United States. The beautiful thing about the American system is they have all these wonderful checks and balances, but in order to pick a president, they filter through 20 or 30 different people before you get down to that two-person binary, and they force majority. They do all this sort of stuff. Canada's parliamentary system of first-past-the-post, I hate to say it, but in my opinion, needs more political choice, not less. It's not just the PPC. Diehard liberals who are sick and tired of the far leftism, and they don't like the PPC for whatever reason, I tell them, break off, form your own parties, because in European parliamentary democracies, they have 20 or 30 different political parties, and they often have first past the post combined with a list or a popular vote system where they split some of the seats up based on percentages. But we're stuck with this archaic system until we get somebody in power who wants to have a conversation about constitutional reform, reforming the Senate, because that needs to happen. That's the most outdated, corrupt institution we have in this country.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I understand what you're saying about party politics, but as long as we have this system, and even if this system is illegitimate, because there's an argument that it is the system that is in common use and practice today. And in order to manipulate or work within it at all, you have to have political organization. You can't do it any other way.
Yeah, of course,
so right. In a sense, I get what you're saying. I just think it is a necessary evil of the system that we live in. And bringing together another political option that can draw support from the left and right, or the disenfranchised. I mean, what is it, 37% of people who don't vote in this country?
Well,
that's a huge demographic that's just not represented, right?
Yeah. Here's the thing. Frank kind of touched on it now. Jürgen just touched on it. It's not the parties that's the problem in itself. I mean, sure, it comes down to their policies and everything else and their personalities that are running on the front. It's the problem that in Canada, the system is the problem. All right. It's not the parties. It's not the options or the choices. We don't have enough choices. That's absolutely 100% true. But when you have to do that whole mentality of vote for the lesser of two evils, there's the problem. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, if you know this is bad, but this is also bad, this is just not so as bad.
Yeah.
It's still bad.
That paradigm needs to change.
Yeah. It's still bad. So the thing is, you have to get the system to address the core problems. And to do that, you can't have a career in politics in the back of your mind. You can't be that career politician-minded person that wants to pad his lifestyle for the next 30 years on the taxpayer's dime, because it's not going to be popular, because you're not just fighting the system, but you're fighting a global situation about the position within that. So, you know, you need somebody that's going to go up and use that foul mouth and use that blunt words and say, look, enough is enough. It's got to come back to the people. And to get the people to do that, somebody has the courage to actually say it. Right now, Bernier's having that limited result, and it costs the Conservative Party to have to recant and actually take a stance on, say, Migration Compact, for instance, because he was doing almost that. He's doing it, but not all the way, all right? He's doing just enough to rock the boat, okay? And he stole some of those votes from the left. and from the conservatives. So the conservatives had to fight back by saying, oh, yeah, we're going to stand against the Migration Compact, which is absolutely not the case, right? They're just not. The point is that in the end, is Bernier the salvation? Well, no, he's not. Not in any way. He's a career politician. Is he going to waylay some of the problems that we're dealing with as a nation for Canadians? Absolutely. Bernier is a time buyer. So he may not be the solution, but I'll tell you what, folks, he is going to give us the time to address the problems.
If not, he's going to start a national conversation, which we need.
And until we get to that national conversation, nothing's going to change.
I agree with you. I said earlier in the show that we right now the system does not, in Canada, is not set up to serve the people. But if we can get a national conversation going about that, and he's willing to engage in a national conversation, you don't hear that coming out of any other mainstream platform at all, period.
But he's
going to address. I'm going to let Frank add. I'm going to let Frank add his thoughts to that one real quick, and then I'm going to let you're going to add his thoughts because we got four of us in here. I want everybody to be talking.
Yeah, I'll be very quick. Just to address what Gary said about it can't be it cannot be a career politician. I completely agree with that. Anybody that's thinking about padding out their pension or padding out their career is not going to be the person that's going to guide the country towards change. They just want to poll test whatever the hell's coming out of their mouth to the point where they can actually win so that they can get that cushy job. And this is part of the reason as well that I like Max, because he hit a point where in his career he could not advance his value systems within the Conservative Party of Canada. And he does have a set of values which he wants to advance, ideas that he is dedicated to. And he will spend the rest of his life trying to advance them or he will fail. But what I liked was that he is now anteed up his career and his name in the history book, because he would have been, if he had kept his mouth shut, he would have been a cabinet minister and a potential CPC government. He would have had the cushy job. He would have had the nice newspaper articles. He would have had all the accolade and attention. And he threw that on the pyre to try and do something to make a change. And he could lose his own seat. He could lose. This whole thing could fail. And if it does, he sacrificed everything to do it. And that to me is the ante. That's what separates him from I know he's had a long history in politics. He's not entirely a career politician because he spent more time in the private sector, but he gave up what he built in politics to try and do this, which is one thing. And then the second thing is the system. This system, this Canadian political system that we have, is literally the most broken system in the Western world. It couldn't be more backwards. It couldn't be more broken. It couldn't be more corrupted. The level of duplicity and corruption and backwardsness of the Canadian political structure is the biggest, as Gary said, is the biggest impediment to positive change in this country. And until we are ready to open up that conversation, until we can get to a stage where we can have that conversation, no change is going to be effective. We have the potential in the next 10 years to completely revamp constitutionally how this country works. And if we manage to pull it off, we will be the most advanced governing country on earth if we manage to do it properly. But we got to get there from here.
Well, yep. You have to get there from here for sure, and you have to get the support of everyone to do that. And in a short time frame, I don't know if that's possible between now and next October, but hey, all kudos to you for you guys for trying that. I feel so unsure about the October elections. I feel so there are so many things I feel are going to come down the pike in the next few months that could change, that could alter everything after June of this year. Whether it be climate, whether it be some kind of natural disasters, whether it be some kind of major false flag by the deep state to stop their loss of their hold on global power. I fear for that move for sure. When a desperate animal is caged and put back in his cage, we all know they come out with their teeth gnawed and their fangs are flailing for sure. So I fear for something like that. And I think that could change everything, right? Any discussion we might have about who's going to win the next election could be up in smoke as well with the indictments that are coming from from what I hear, another 870 troops have been sent down to Guantanamo on a 400-day stint. So there's a lot of things happening in America. More judges have been elected very quietly that people don't know about as well, very quietly. I posted a story, and I'm still making sure that it's confirmed about Hillary being indicted, but there is evidence we now know that a lot of these people since December 21st have been very quiet. There's been no Twitter feeds from any of these people. So we've heard about a 10-day blackout, and maybe that's what the 10-day blackout was all about.
I was going to ask you about that, Jürgen, because I've been trying to get to the bottom of that, and I heard you make that statement last night. And there is some murmur about it, but I can't get hardcore, undeniable factual.
The original story I had, Barry, the original story I had on YouTube from a source that I've trusted for a lot of my stories over the last year, has disappeared off his page. So
you're not the first person to tell me that. Two other people that sent me links have said the links have disappeared today.
Yeah, so you know, you put two and two together. You put the fact that all these people that tweet every day aren't tweeting anymore for 8-9 days. There's something going on. And we're talking Jim Comey as well since the 23rd of December. This is huge. Also on his same report, he also had a report that had the indictment there for Justin Trudeau. So, this is just something, and these stories disappear. And Frank, I'm sure you've done that too. You found something and poof, you go back and it's gone. So is it real? Is it not real? You're not sure, but it's sources you've trusted before. So I'm going to try to keep digging but the fact these people aren't tweeting, that sends up a red flag. Something going on.
What are your thoughts on that, gentlemen? Gary.
Well, I'm going to have to dissent from the populist concept that a lot of people are putting out there. Let me tell you something. You said it already. This is big, right? And you talk about names that are like household names these days. They're big names. Let me tell you something. If they actually had an indictment out for Hillary Clinton, for instance, never mind the fact that she hasn't texted, because, you know, she could just be not texting. Would it be nice to hear that she got indicted? Absolutely. But if she actually did, there'd be too much hubbub, too much fanfare, too much of everything. And believe me, Trump himself would be out there saying, I told you we were going to get her and we got her. You know, the reality is there's no indictment for Hillary.
Well, I have to say that's a very interesting thought, and you know, I've been trying to get to the bottom of myself. At this point, I'm not going to say there's an indictment out for Hillary, but there is a lot of things right now. And I was talking to one of my best friends in the world today, down in the United States of America, who's very, very deeply involved in U.S. intelligence. And when the man says something to me, I really respect what he's saying. And he actually pretty well reiterated on what Jürgen just said to us, that there is some crazy stuff about to happen. We can't put our finger on it. But to say that there isn't going to be people going down, if this is being played out as an agenda, I would disagree with that. I believe we're having a mass agenda being played out, a mass charade being played out on us right now. And the end game is, the means of getting to the end game are beyond what we can even begin to imagine, because we're dealing with psychopaths. And I don't want to get down that rabbit hole too deep, but I honestly believe we are being duped, that we're being set up, and that there's a big, big play behind the curtains right now that most people haven't got a clue of what's going on. My thoughts. I'll pass the talking stick. Just my thoughts. Frank, was that too deep for you?
So, in regards to all that, I mean, we're talking about the greatest rumor mill that's possibly sprung up in our recent memory, or at least in my lifetime. We're talking about the sealed indictments. We're talking about the inner workings of the Justice Department and the human trafficking rings of Haiti and all these different things. And we're talking about Q right now. And what I think about that is that I always encourage people to not believe in human beings. If you're going to believe in anything, believe in God. And I'm not telling you to believe in God either, but that's about the best thing you can believe in. If you're working and you're living paycheck to paycheck and you've got a rich grandparent who could keel over at any given time and leave you $200,000, you keep working anyway, because the bank's not going to care about what you're getting in the future. The bank's only going to care about the fact that your check clears at the end of the month. So you have to stay in the trenches, and you got to keep working and not put too much stock in this inevitable inheritance. And that being said, I've supported and defended and debated Donald Trump since he entered this race as something different, something that could actually win that was significantly different. And I still maintain that he is going to be the most misunderstood U.S. president, maybe since Lincoln, because Lincoln was hated in his time too. Here's a guy that, you know, announced last week that he's going to pull troops out of Afghanistan and Syria, keeping a campaign promise that actually really attracted me. It's taken a while to get there and whatever. And maybe it's a smokescreen, maybe it's not a smokescreen, but the amazing thing is when a guy says he's going to end U.S. involvement in Syria, the left goes insane. They absolutely go insane. And back when the election was on and it was Clinton versus Trump, I used to tell people, I'm like, Clinton is promising you the Third World War. That's what she is committing to it. And the Democrat, the anti-war Democrat that was raging during the entire Bush administration, that disappeared when Obama came in and bombed out seven countries and took out Gaddafi because he wanted to go to a gold standard or revamp his currency and reduce dependence on the petrodollar. And, you know, the same guy that bombed seven countries and they had no problem with that. Trump hasn't started any wars yet that we know of. Maybe there's something behind the scenes, but he hasn't started any new engagements. He's just been managing, and his administration has been managing, engagements that they're already involved in. And now it looks like they're going to draw down and pull out and start rebuilding that notion of we're in a post-American empire world. The sole superpower status has been passed, and now we're going to try and reintroduce an element of isolationism and looking after our own instead of meddling in international affairs. And everybody just condemns him. He's still the worst garbage scum of the earth guy imaginable. So, like, I mean, that on its own is enough to pursue in an everyday way. And if there is some big deal about to come down, I mean, keep yourselves informed. Don't keep your ear to the ground. I read all this stuff too, and I keep myself. But keep working as patriots towards the nation state. Keep working on sovereignty. Keep working on these things in an everyday way. Keep putting your 8 hours a day in, because you never know. That inheritance, it's been promised for 2 or 3 years now. It hasn't showed up yet. So just keep working. And if it comes, great. It's a payday for everybody.
No, you're absolutely right, Frank. I couldn't agree more. We have to keep working for sure. And I totally agree on the fact, you know, our future right now depends on our sovereignty. We have to make sure that we strengthen our borders. We have to make sure that we strengthen our nation state. The attack on even the word nationalist is enough to drive you crazy. You know, the language that's being used against any conservative movement is going to ramp up in 2019, the censorship and all that. And that's why Gary and synthesis and all that is so important. And that's coming up very quickly, isn't it, Gary?
Yes, sir. Tomorrow is the big day.
Tomorrow's the big day.
It's going to be an interesting time. I mean, kind of like Jürgen just said, and like Frank's reiterated, and Barry said more than once, and anybody else you listen to in this same community, you know, all these things are wonderful, and these changes are going to be dramatically impacting your everyday personal lives. But that doesn't mean we let up. We have to keep pushing forward. We have to keep soldiering on. And this is what the Americans taught back in the day. You've got to take responsibility for your political direction, because the minute you stop, somebody else will decide for you. And that's what we did in Canada en masse. And that's what we're changing en masse. And it's great to see all these things in the other parts of the world, but I'm focused on Canada. I love Canada. And I love our position in Canada. I love the Canadian people and the things we offer the world. So we need to become relevant to the world again.
Yeah.
And we need to be relevant to ourselves. So all these things that are going on, it won't matter what anyone else does. It's what we do that matters. It's what we decide as it was meant to be. So, you know, in regards to synthesis, just to kind of put it out there since Jürgen brought it up, you know, this is one of those choices. This is one of those things of taking back our voice. We're not asking permission anymore. We're just taking it back. It's ours. And we will take it back. We got this place to do it. We got people that can make things happen, to inspire others, to get all those folks to do the same thing. Be that change you want to see. Look in the mirror if you want to.
I just clicked on Facebook there. I'm up to 95,000 views, guys.
That's awesome.
Wow. Well, I've been sharing that around everywhere. I've already got
my Facebook page. I'm going to have to check this out. I'm missing out.
You got to go listen. You got to go listen to the rant. It was great. Right from the hip.
I will. I love it.
I see a new Franklin book. Franklin finds out.
Yeah. I see a new public speaker without the F-bombs.
Wow. I'm just overwhelmed. I'm freaking overwhelmed. I can't believe
it. Get, you know, I might have got down that rabbit hole a little bit too deep a few minutes ago, but, you know, there's a lot of things that influence my train of thought, and I kind of accumulate a whole pile of stuff that really gets my thoughts going in a lot of directions. And sure, we have a lot of political stuff going on. We have a lot of geological. But I really do see us pushing the left really hard right now. They're losing the battle, and to say that nothing's going to become of these indictments in the states, I would push back against that. I believe that there's going to be quite a bit come out of it. None of us know exactly where it's going, but the fact that you can't put this genie back in the bottle right now, the American public are aware of too much of what is going on, and they're demanding answers. So where it's all going, I don't know exactly, but I know that if some of this goes down like anything like we kind of think it might, or it's going to go down some way like we think it might, it's going to create a real state of chaos in our society. Hey, and Barry, all I say to people is you got to be prepared for that possibility.
Barry, can I add something here? If you don't mind.
You can, Steve. Go ahead.
I want to address this Q and this QAnon and the sealed indictments and all of this kind of stuff. What is Trump's claim to fame? What did he run on?
You're fired.
Draining the swamp?
Draining the swamp.
What does that mean? Does that mean destroying the left here in America? Question mark?
Well, that's open to interpretation, I think.
Okay,
I think so, too.
Allegedly, yeah. Why would the system destroy half of itself?
That's what I've been saying.
Steve, why would the system...
I actually have this conversation.
Why would the system destroy its 50% of its illusion? 50% of the illusion in government is the left, and the other 50% of the illusion is the right.
Great thought, Steve. Okay, well, look, we're going to take a break here for a few minutes because my bladder is actually killing me right, guys. And we're going to be back in about 3 minutes or 4 minutes, and I want you guys to hang around, all of you, because this is getting pretty interesting. At break here today, guys, I lost a brother a couple years ago to cancer. A gentleman had a great influence on my life, and he sang this song to a friend of his who got lost in the station nightclub fire. And I want to pay tribute to Rick today. You are not forgotten, my brother.
You're listening to www.peoplesinternetradio.com. Seeking solutions.
Living in a-
welcome back to second hour, guys. And Annie, I didn't mean to tear you up there, but I miss Rick a lot and had a great influence on my life. So kudos to you, Rick, and we know you're in a better place, buddy. Anyways, welcome back to the show, guys. And we had quite a lively conversation going there the first hour, and I want to carry on with it because there's lots of great thoughts here right now. Welcome back, guys. And where were we when we left? I can't even remember now. Completely sidetracked. We've been talking about so many things. Somebody start the conversation.
Well, we've been kind of everywhere.
I know we have. A million places already.
We've been kind of a million places already. I think it's great to see that Canada is rising up, that's for sure. I'll tell you one thing I'd really like to talk about, and that is the climate in Canada. I spent so many years in Ottawa as a businessman. We had businesses in Ottawa. I also, you know, I got involved in politics in 2006. I ran for provincial politics and all that. I was up against Lisa McLeod, actually, who now sits beside the premier. But the climate here in Medicine Hat, when we had the rally last week, I've been to so many meetings and rallies up at Parliament Hill. I've given speeches there. I've been interviewed there over the past number of decades. And I got to tell you, the feeling in the air here out west in Medicine Hat at the rally is different. In Ottawa, the rallies, yes, you were surrounded by like-minded people, but the air was still stifling. I find here you're surrounded by the like-minded people, but the air is freer. There's a feeling, there's a different feeling of that freedom and that camaraderie. And I think Canadians need to get back to that basic pioneer spirit that I feel out here is such a big difference from the spirit that seems to be caught in a claustrophobic fog of some kind of bureaucratic entitlement, especially around Ottawa where you have the federal government and all of that. It just seems to suppress people in a way that depresses the spirit, I guess is what I'm trying to say. The spirit out here, when I see Medicine Hat with its small population, have almost 1,000 people on the street with signs and flags on different overpasses and 650 trucks. And then an hour up the road in Brooks, you've got all kinds of people on the street and another 450 trucks on the same day. That's 1,100 trucks in two small villages, not that far apart, right? And the feeling standing there with those people, I'll tell you, yesterday singing the anthem, I was honored. The fellow, the administrator, asked me to lead singing the anthem, and I did. And I'll tell you, I had chills up my spine. I felt so patriotic. I felt so surrounded by my fellow countrymen that I didn't feel in Ottawa. I felt like bits of me were this. I was supposed to be French. I was supposed to be my native German. I was supposed to be English speaking. I was supposed to be something. It just feels like there's more Canadiana here because I think because of more of a pioneer spirit still sits amongst the people that live in this part of our country. I don't know. I'd like you guys to comment on that. It's just something that I'm feeling here that I didn't feel in the 50 years of my political activity in Ottawa. I'll tell
Amen.
You.
Amen. I felt it coming through on that video. I feel it now when I see the trucks lining up in Lloyd Minster as far as the eye can see. Yes. I see the movement rising in the country. And sure, there's going to be people going to go, hey, you're going the wrong way. But to me right now, anything that will make the public aware what people do with it, how they handle it, how they conceive it, or whether they go forward in their actions and their responsibilities, anything right now that brings public awareness to all the corruption and the absolute evilness going into our country is a good thing. And what I see with the yellow vests, it's going in that direction. We're going to get a lot of pushback from other people, say that's not great. Some people may say that's great. Some people, you know, we're always going to get that conflict, but I see a unifying cause right now. My thoughts. Go ahead, gentlemen. Frank, your thoughts.
Well, I think, that actually gives me a lot of inner peace, actually, to hear that from you, Jürgen, because that sort of patriotism is what we need, because I feel like Canada as a unit is stuck between two hegemons, the United States and China, and both have such a strong hold over our country. And I feel like the only way that we can unshackle ourselves from that and reclaim any sort of sovereignty and freedom and independence for Canada is together as a nation. I don't feel that we can't fragment and expect to have, we can't balkanize and expect to achieve independence and freedom. We'll just get sucked into one or the other hegemon and become a colony. I'll have to watch this video because you singing the anthem, and I'm guessing from what you said, all these people singing the anthem with you, means that Canada is still alive in the West, and that makes me feel really good because without Canada, and this is the other thing, we talk about yellow vests and we talk about movements, it's great as a catalyst, but until we have a Canadian-centric movement, a Canadian-centric identity, this idea of what we are becomes manifest in the public consciousness, we aren't going to have a cause that actually succeeds in growing into a mass movement. Maybe you're part of the start of that, Jürgen.
Yeah, I think this is a start, Frank. That's what I think.
Well, I think we all.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
I think we're all on the tip of a spear in a different way. You know, all of us are contributing to a massive movement, and this includes the people in Europe. It includes the people all throughout the world that are fighting for our freedoms. And that's what I was shouting about when I first started screaming yesterday on that pickup truck. You know, this is so much more than about pipelines. And I'd like to get back to something you said, Frank. And what is Maxime Vernier's position on the notion that we have a nation within a nation? I mean, I'm tired that we have this conversation all the time, and I'm just so sick of it. It makes me so sad. It breaks my freaking heart every time. It's always Canada and Quebec. Canada and Quebec. And I'm just tired of it. And I think the Canadian people en masse are tired of it. I think we want one country. We want one flag. And the only way we can achieve that, like, how do we get this notion, get rid of this notion of a nation within a nation? What's Maxime Bernier's stand on that? Because I don't think we can ever be together if we continue that.
I am so glad you brought that up, because that was the third thing that I forgot from a while ago, was the fact that he is a Quebecois from southern Quebec and from that area of Quebec that is the entrepreneurial capital of Quebec, where all their business structure comes from, but it's also an old sovereignist stronghold where he is. And here's the thing, with Max, he's been bucking the Quebec status quo for a long time, and he's bucking it now. In part of sacrificing his career, he's also saying that equalization isn't correct. It's in the Constitution, but we can adjust the formula so that no longer is money being transferred from the West, largely into the province of Quebec. He's come out and said that is unjust. He's about Canada as a national identity, not as Quebec as one distinct identity, and Canada as the rest. And here's the thing, because you mentioned, you know, not having another Quebec politician, and I have to counter that a little bit, because we can't judge people based on where they're born. We have to judge people based on their ideas. There are, you know, there's people born from all parts of the world who can have really good ideas. Max is not a Justin Trudeau. He's not a Jean Chrétien, and he's not a Brian Mulroney. He's a very unique individual with very unique ideas, and his dedication is to a Canadian identity and unity. And an interesting thing, when he was running for the CPC leadership, he trounced his competition in Alberta. He out-fundraised Andrew Scheer something like 4-1 out there. The only person that came close to him was Kevin O'Leary, and he was way behind. And he won the popular vote in Alberta among conservatives, for the reason that he was the only one talking about pipelines, Energy East, equalization being totally unfair, the imbalance of Confederation. The one thing that I haven't heard him talk about that is very key to me is that, you know, on the one hand, in parliamentary representation, a province with 3 million people isn't going to have that much representation because you have a low population. But the idea that BC and Alberta together, who have the population of Quebec, only get 12 seats in the Senate, and Quebec gets 24.
It's disgusting.
That's got to change.
And I know
that that is something that will, that's part of that national conversation that we might not be able to create in time for 2019. 2019 is right there. But by 2023, we might be in a position where we can push for that, because Senate reform is a passion of mine. And if I continue with the PPC, if the PPC continues to be the vehicle, because I'm not telling you right now, I'm not a partisan hack. A lot of people think I am. I'm with them because I believe in what Bernier is doing and I believe in what the policies are. If that changes, I will change. Max knows that and the party knows that. And if they can't live with that, they can't live with me. But to get to a place where we can open up the conversation about Senate reform, that's huge for me. And I'm going to push for that. I'm also going to push for the death penalty for pedophiles, but that's another story. These are the Senate reform issue is the issue of our time. It's one of the things that we can do that can really adjust it. I think we need regional representation along the lines of what the United States has done with their Senate, where population doesn't matter, but the land has a voice in at least one institution. And the land that is Alberta and BC needs equal representation to the land that is the center. And that's what we can do. So I think it's right there. Like when it comes to Max in Quebec, he's already said enough the Conservative Party of Canada is pouring not only money, but they've allied with Quebec Liberals and they've allied with the sovereignists to try and beat Max in Bose. I don't know if you know about who they're running in Bose, but he's an ex-provincial Liberal. And they've got Jacques Parizeau, they've got these, they've got these Quebec sovereignists coming out to back this candidate to try and beat Max in his own riding because he's bucking the Quebec status quo. I mean, I have to say it. This isn't about personal allegiance. I'm not worshiping the guy, but I'm looking at what he gives up. If he fails, he's done in this country. Finished. It's over. He doesn't get to go back. This is it. And I have a lot of respect for that.
But on the same token, that's kind of what I was saying to you before and what I've said to so many others. He is a lame duck. Now, here's the thing. My only major issue isn't really something I'm going to get into at this time on the show, but I've already expressed it with a few of you, Frank included, when it comes to, right? And it's not really for me to kind of bring up on the show because it'll take it in a whole new direction at that point. And I'm not prepared for that because it's not my show. I will say this. All the things that you guys have pointed out are exactly the problem. And it's exactly what needs to happen. That conversation needs to happen. That Senate reform needs to happen. All these specific things that are so sensitive within the country because they've spent decades dividing the country into regions, into provinces, this province versus that province. You know, there's a lot of anger within the West, specifically in Alberta. And have they been treated shabbily? Of course they have. You know, anybody that's willing to actually stand for Canada will have to speak up for Alberta and address those issues. To hell with their career. They have to take the chance and actually take an affirmation and stand for the West, because the West is part of Canada. And if we had a system, sort of like Frank pointed out, that was more in line with the Americans, where there was representation, I promise you, just from talking to all the Westerners I know, from when I was out there, from now, they would get back on board. But we're not going to see change, folks, if we don't make change. And if we keep doing stuff the same way the game's been played, what kind of change do you think that's going to have? It's not.
Oh, so we're going to have to ask years, Gary, as you and I have discussed, and nothing has changed. We have to completely revamp our trajectory.
So all these folks out there that are criticizing and talking about Bernier and talking about Scheer and talking about Trudeau and all this, that's beginning. That's the beginnings. And that's wonderful to see. It's wonderful to hear. It was great to hear Canadians actually start singing the national anthem out loud without shying away and hanging their head. That was awesome. But guess what? You're going to need to do more and you're going to need to step up. And you don't like Bernier? Fine. Step up and be Bernier and actually push a pro-Canada stance. Step up and be that mayor, that provincial leader, that federal leader. Do something instead of just posture online complaining about how bad it is.
You're absolutely
We've complained
right, Gary.
So long, we just don't know how good we freaking got it.
Yeah. You hit it on the head. We have become a country that is so soft. When I ran in 2006 and 73% of the people decided to stay at home and not even vote, I was so dejected. I thought, what kind of a country are we living in? I can't believe that so many people stayed at home, that only like a quarter of them, a little more than a quarter, showed up to vote. They even bothered. And most of those were people that were party affiliated people their parents voted this way, so they voted that way. They don't really pay attention to the issues or anything. So we've got a major problem there. And no matter what Maxime Bernier does, getting rid of that problem is the major hurdle we're all going to have in trying to right the ship here. And Gary, you nailed it bang on. You know, they can be social warriors and make all these comments, but get up there and be a Maxime Maxine Bernier. Be a Donald Trump. Be somebody. Do something. Get off your ass. My whole life
I've said something more important, Jurgen. You said something more important. And this is what a lot of people overlook. See, as much as I look at it as a Canadian issue, it absolutely is. But what you're not addressing, that elephant in the room that people aren't getting, I mean, they sort of say it, they sort of get it, but this is a consciousness thing, all right? The Western civilization is getting a conscience again.
Mm-hmm.
The world is awakening again. We look at it like it's a national thing, a party thing. We look at it as a yellow vest thing. We look at it all these extremities. What we don't admit is that we've been here before, and we're going back to that again. And the consequences of that is both good and bad. We're going to see some real bad times coming, folks. We're not going to avoid it, okay?
Well,
but the positive thing is people are going to come back together again. People are
well, that's the thing.
Humanity's going to get back human again, and we're going to start doing the thing again. That's the outcome. And that can only be good for the average Joe. That can only be good for Canadians. It can only be good, you know, for Americans or for the British or for anybody. I mean,
For people kind, Gary.
Make sure you're politically correct, buddy, because we are being listened to. Oh, by the way,
obey your EU directives.
Welcome to the show, Canadian Secret Intelligence Services.
Bleep, 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 mankind. I can't believe what I said. Wait.
You're doing very good, Gary. You've actually come a long way since I've met you.
Oh, shit. My bad.
Yeah. I'm going to let who was going next here? Frank, did you want to respond to that? Yeah. Yeah, Frank wanted to ask.
Yeah, no, just.
I'm just sitting back listening to this. This is great. I'll throw a few in.
No, it's all good. The thing is, with what Gary was saying, is we do, and what Jurgen was saying too, is we do have a lot of complacency. People are very comfortable, and it's not hard to be comfortable in this very generous welfare state. As much as people complain about inequality and poverty and all this stuff, there are very few people in this country who actually know what poverty is. When a welfare, the average statistic for welfare recipients is 70% of them have air conditioning. They all got running water. They've all got flushable toilets. Yeah. They all got refrigeration. Like we're all rich, basically. We're all rich. We're all comfortable. We're all and suffering.
I don't have that, and it's by choice. But you don't appreciate how rich you are until you lose that.
Well, and this is the I'll beg to differ on that, because I definitely appreciate these things every single time I make use of them. When I turn on a tap and water comes out of it that's clean, I'm saying a little prayer to Providence, because it's just the most glorious thing. I get in the shower, a nice hot shower, and I say to the wife, this is a luxury that I never want to lose. And I will, there's no limit to what I will do to preserve this. Now, back to what you said.
I got to agree with you, Frank, but most people, our general society, as a rule, don't appreciate anything that's around them because they are completely in that system. Go ahead.
So what will wake them up? Inevitably, suffering and calamity will solve this problem for us. We know it will, because it's done it every time in history. Crisis occurs and people get sick and tired of dying and starving, and they come together again, and that's great. But I think of a friend of mine who told me a story about his own life, where he was a door-to-door salesman, going up and down the street knocking on doors. The guy was making six figures a year, but he hated it. He's like, I hate knocking on these doors. It's such garbage. I got to go, and I got to knock, and I got to disturb these people. I got to go through the whole pitch, everything else. So he made the decision. He's like, I'm not going to knock on any doors anymore. So he quits his job, not really knowing where he's going to go. So he has to sell the wife's car because they can't afford to keep that on the road anymore. And they got to sell the house. And they got to move into a town home. And then they get rid of the town home, but they're in a little apartment. Well, eventually the decline of material condition causes the wife to leave. There's a big divorce. There's 3 years of discord. There's a bankruptcy. There's all this garbage that happens for him to learn how to thrive again. And at the end of the process, he's telling me the story. He says to me, you know, I would have been far better off if I just had kept knocking on those bloody doors, because it was a lot easier. And that's where we are right now, whether it's being politically active or running for election or getting out and talking to people. I mean, it can be as simple as going to a coffee shop and engaging in conversation. And when you're online, rather than it just descending into this hate fest of labeling and calling people names to try and have a conversation, you see me bang my head off at that friggin' wall every single day try to have a conversation with people, but that's knocking on doors. And maybe we won't succeed. You know, I'm pretty sure I can say that Gary thinks that we're not going to make it. He's probably right, that it's going to take some serious crisis to wake humanity back up in the West. And that's probably true. But complacency is the biggest issue. A lack of appreciation. We don't know how good we got it. I've said to Gary before that I don't have a hard time admitting that though I can do hard things, I'm a pretty soft guy. I like my comforts. I like lights that turn on when I flip a switch. I like a flushable toilet. Like, these are all things we should appreciate because they're a measure of wealth. We are rich.
Don't knock the warmth of an oil lantern.
Oh, it's beautiful. That's wonderful too.
I'll tell you, when I first met my wife, one of our first vacations was down in Mexico. That would have been in 83 or 84. And we went down and we got on some horses and we went for a ride with a group of people. And we went to this village just at the foot of these mountains. And as we entered into the village, the women were walking up to a stream with a basket full of clothes. And you could see other women at the stream banging rocks against their clothes, washing their clothes in the stream. And I looked at Heather, and Heather looked at me, and you know, at the time, Heather was like 21 or so, and quite naive, and she just, her jaw dropped. And as we entered into the village, you could see these women, you know, like it was just so bizarre to walk like almost 100 years into the past and see these villagers in these huts where there's no doors. They just have an open door. There's no door. It was just like an opening to get into these huts where three or four people stayed in this one room, and they did their laundry down by the river and all of that. I mean, it's just like you said, Frank, every day is a blessing. Every day that we have, look at this, there's four of us in four different parts of this country, and we're talking here in the comfort of our homes. I mean, we should be grateful for everything, every minute, every breath we take. Absolutely right.
It's minus 12 here now. I'm a little chilly. I'm not so comfortable.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, Gary.
Well, close the door, Gary. You're up there and way up in northern Ontario there.
Yeah.
Sorry, winter is here.
I couldn't be happier. I'm absolutely comfortable. I only threw that in there for silly humor. I got to work on that. I'm sorry.
That's pretty silly. Stab me in the heart, buddy. No, my bad. You're bad. Anyhow, no, it's great. Frank, you're absolutely right. We gotta thank God every day for the blessings that we have in this country. And that's the shame of what we have to go through. You know, I was speaking with some people at that rally, and everyone's of the same opinion. This country, with its riches, its natural resources, the water, everything that we have here that the rest of the world struggles to get, should lend every citizen of this country a nice paycheck at the end of the year without having to pay any taxation. That's the belief I'm of, because of the riches that we do have. I fear that we have sold out so much of this country already, that we have the Chinese, the Saudis, various groups that we already owe so much money to, that we're paying them with our resources, much like the Kenyans just gave up a port, much like the South Africans have given up territory to the Chinese and things like that. All over the world, they're taking over land and they're taking over resources. How much do you think of resources Canada has given up would be my question I'd like to throw at you three gentlemen.
80%.
I think if we know the actual figures, it would shock people.
I think so.
I agree.
What do you think, Frank? You've done a lot of research into that, I bet. What do you think?
I totally agree. I think we're over 80% foreign-owned, if you really want to look at influence and control. We're losing control of our ports. Make no mistake, it is a long road back from where we are right now, because we did get it together in the 1990s, which was the last relative opportunity we had to change direction. We did get it together then, and things have gotten a lot worse. We have very little in terms of domestic manufacturing that's not foreign-owned. We don't produce a lot of our own food. We don't can or preserve anything. We don't produce finished materials. We are a farm. We're a colony. And the only way we can change that status is by coming together as a country and pushing back against it, either gradually, which is a long road, or through the calamity that is the two hegemons in the world colliding with each other to try and figure out who's going to dominate the next century. And we're the space between the hammer and the anvil, Canada. And, you know, we have to fortify ourselves to be able to survive that process. If we fragment, we won't make it. But either way, peaceful or through calamity, it's a long road back. That's my opinion.
Agree. You can't fix something that's taken so long to fix or to break in a night or two nights or a generation or one political party in one 4-year term. But I think we're on the right road right now. But it's going to take Canadians, like you said, really getting off their butts and getting active. Not sharing links on social media, but getting out and talking to your neighbors and your friends and having a conversation anytime you get an opportunity to share a conversation about what's going on in the country. You got to engage your friends and your neighbors because we all want the same thing, guys. Just most people are still in the dark.
And do not be afraid to get politically involved. If there's a politician coming to your small town to announce, for instance, you know, recently there was a funding announcement that came to one of the small towns near me, and you go out to that and put your face. These people remember you, especially if you raise a ruckus. If you're a voice, even if you don't think your audience is that big, they remember you, and you can go out there and just by your presence, you can have an influence and remind them that there's pressure from below, and that that you're willing to exert that pressure. Do these things. Go to council meetings. Give your counselors a call. If they're doing a breakfast social somewhere, go and see them because don't expect, you know, don't do it because of what you'll get out of it. Don't do it for attention, but do it because it's your civic duty. Do it silently because that silent power is far more profound than 100 Facebook likes. People don't understand how powerful they are. That's one of the messages I always try to bring to the table. Each individual has an immeasurable amount of power. The myth is that we've adopted over the last 40, 50 years, and it's totally out of date now, is that we don't have any individual power. Your vote isn't all you have. You, as a sovereign individual, making choices, showing up to events, doing it responsibly, getting in people's faces, and asking difficult questions, raising a bit of a ruckus, and doing so responsibly, that's powerful stuff. Don't underestimate the value.
I've asked my MP for 4 meetings and he's refused them all now because he don't want to talk to me, Frank. Nathan Cullen. Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's it. People like us, we do that. We go to those meetings. I mean, I've been in politicians' faces for as long as I can remember. And then there's the vast majority who, no matter what you do, will not. And that, you know, we've really morphed into a society where we demand all our freedoms, but we don't want to put up any responsibility to back up those freedoms.
Oh, that's it. That's it, man.
We have to fight on the homeland like our soldiers fight overseas, right? Basically, we forget that.
Exactly. We should say we've never had to put up those responsibilities. We've never had to do that. We're such a complacent, soft society. Go ahead, Frank.
No, I was just going to say quickly, you can't have successful freedom. You can't have liberty without a matching success, or a matching set of self-imposed obligations. It would be nice if they're codified somewhere where you can read them, but there should be something within you that says, I need to pay up the fee for liberty. I need to pay up the fee of freedom by dedicating some of my time to the pursuit of that.
Well, the
freedom without obligation is empty.
Vigilance is the price of freedom. Patriots, right?
To quote an American quote, vigilance is the price of freedom. And it's so true that we've let this society go so far because of our lack of vigilance, because of our lack of participation. And I'm just as guilty as the next guy because about 8 years ago in my life, I had no idea really what was going on around me in the world. I mean, I'm sure we all heard about a little bit of this, a little bit of that, but no idea of really what was going on. And now that we all are aware of it, it's our duty. We cannot turn our backs on what we're doing right now because we're absolutely committed to what we're doing.
We're all in.
We're all in.
Guys like us are all in. And look at us. This is the beauty of what we're doing here. This is four fellas We've had differing opinions on some of the issues we talked about here, and yet we still managed to have a decent conversation. There's nobody screaming at somebody else, calling somebody names because they have a differing opinion. It's respect. It's mutual respect. And because of that, you create admiration, you create a strength, and you create a bond, and you create a national identity. It's that easy. It's those steps that will make
it create
a dynamite country. Hey.
Okay. You know, some days I get discouraged and I think that, you know, we're not really making an impact on people. But then you go into the coffee shop and somebody that you've been talking to for years all of a sudden is engaging in real heart-to-heart conversations with you. And that one little bit of encouragement is what keeps me going, because I experience that now. People are really, really starting to pay attention.
Like Frank's saying,
Jürgen, we got to look people in the face. We got to look them in the eye and talk to them with our hearts, okay? Because when you talk with your heart, people listen. And, man, I'll tell you, if people aren't paying attention and they're just refusing to pay attention right now, the human heart's been so hardened, and that's a conversation we could get into for hours, why our society, why our world is the way it is right now. But the bottom line is...
It's Kelly Elizabeth.
Hi, Kelly. I'll finish with, well, just let me finish what I know. What was I going to say? Hi, Kelly. We really just got to have heart-to-heart conversations with people that are starting to pay attention, because they are starting to pay attention. And they're going to sit down at their dinner table and they're going to talk to their family. And if they're really touched in the heart, which a lot of people I see now are, we're really starting to see the civic responsibility rise in our society. That's a wave that we just have to push really hard right now. Welcome to the show, Kelly. And I know you wanted to make a few comments about the yellow vest movement. And, so I told you, come on and have a talk for a few minutes about it. Welcome to the show. But we have five or six of us in here right now. So
what? So, six people?
I think so.
Special hello to Frank. I hope your Christmas went well, Frank.
It was lovely. Yeah, everything's fine.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. I'm noticing something happening here in Alberta, and I just want to talk a little bit about why I think this yellow vest movement is kind of important right now. It's sort of taken on its own meaning, depending on the group that decides to utilize the movement. You know, they're just like for Alberta, for instance, we're using it for oil and gas, and other communities might be using the movement for something else. But I just think that for Alberta, you know, we've been screaming to be heard for a long time. We've been ignored, but now suddenly, with these yellow vests, we're being heard. And I'm really glad. There was just a video, Michelle Rempel just did a video. I know she's not your favorite, Frank, but Michelle Rempel did a video talking about, you know, keep it up, and this is what we need to do. And I thought, okay, that's kind of nice that the politicians are recognizing, you know, that it's working. But
well, they're trying to capitalize on it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're jumping on the bandwagon now. It's already ran. They didn't risk nothing to get to this point. They didn't support it. They're jumping on the bandwagon after the effects.
Go ahead, Kelly.
Okay. Well, my point is this. What I'm already starting to see happen is some of the other movements, I'm not going to name them by name, that are trying to organize bigger events, like let's say a bigger convoy to a specific location or something like that. These movements now are saying, well, we want to do our own thing and we don't want our message being muddied, so we're not going to allow the yellow vests. Yet that's the very thing that's letting us be heard right now. Now, I realize that the group itself was started by, you know, a bunch of kids. I mean, they're younger. They're doing what they know how to do to be heard. And but I really don't think there's any concern in that area, because I think people have taken that and just decided to use it for what suits their specific event. So I don't know if I'm making any sense. And the other thing I just wanted to bring up, and I don't know who's given this any thought, this would be a good conversation starter, is what are the top three things that we need to do this year on social media to get rid of this government? And I'll stop
move to social. Move to Synthesis Social.
Yeah, I agree with that, Gary. I mean, people that haven't looked at it, you got to go look at what Gary's done and the people that he's involved with. I like it, and I'm over there. So,
yeah. Well, and with what Gary's saying,
if you want to have these conversations, you're going to have a platform to do it at. Facebook isn't that place anymore.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Or Skype. It's all going to be under attack big time. We know that's coming. If it isn't already here. Yeah, we talked a little bit about the Yellow Vest movement earlier. And like I said, anything that can get people to pay attention. Just wake up, maybe somebody that's been kind of in a stupor and kind of knows that something's really going wrong in our country, but doesn't understand the depths of it. This might be a tool to wake them up. And if it does that, I'm all on board.
I'm going to hang up and listen to the rest of the show and see how you guys, what ideas you have for these or what I've brought up here.
Well, thanks for your comments, Kelly. Always nice.
Good to hear your voice, Kelly.
Thanks, Kelly.
Okay, thanks, Kelly. We'll see. She left. But yeah, go ahead, Frank. What do you have to say to that?
I don't want to get into the specifics of it, but. You know, we talk a lot about it. It's common parlance to, what do we do to defeat this government? Defeating this government's not enough. Changing colors isn't enough. We have to start thinking about systemic problems that prevail. We have to start thinking about the agenda that progresses regardless of who is in power. Mm-hmm. And that's, we have to utilize social media to do that very thing. You know, Trudeau must go. It's an empty slogan. It's as empty as Stop Harper. It's the false dichotomy. It's the illusion of choice. It's the illusion of doing something different. We have to start attacking the agenda, and the only way we can do that successfully is by adopting social media platforms that allow for that conversation to happen. The last thing Facebook wants, as Gary said to me before, is a hyper-capitalist run organization. The last thing any of these establishment players want is the destruction of the false dichotomy. They want you to believe that you have choice, and they want to set up strawmen so that you will pursue that illusionary choice. We have to defeat that entire matrix, and we have to look at what the agenda is and how we interrupt it. That would be my contribution to what are the top three things we have to do. We have to honestly attack the agenda.
Hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with Frank on that. And attacking the agenda means we attack the UN. One of the major things we should be focusing on is making people aware of the power that the UN has now with this global migration pact. The fact that their laws can supersede our laws in individual cases. And now picture the sanctuary cities added on top of laws that supersede our laws. What kind of a court nightmare this can create in our country, which is already befuddled by the charter over top of the British common law that ruled us so well for so many years. So we are in for a nightmare in that sense. So we need to focus on letting people know that don't know about the evils of the UN, because there's a lot of people still think this is a great organization that's just out there to help people, when we know who it's run by now, and it has been run by them for years, and what their goals are is not a good thing for the average Canadian citizen. So I think that's very important for Canada to do.
I think that should be number one on everybody's bucket list that's listening to this show that really hasn't looked into it, to look into what the United Nations represents and what's going on with what Jürgen just talked about, because it's beyond alarming that we have given our sovereignty away, and this is only the tip of the iceberg. Anybody that thinks, like you said, the United Nations is a good organization only has to look at multiple factions working inside the United Nations. You can look at their history in 3 or 4 hours over the last 15 or 20 years, and if that doesn't open your eyes to what's going on there, you're totally blind. Go ahead. Somebody add in.
Well, it's bipartisan, you know, and that's what people have to remember. This dedication to the United Nations is a bipartisan force. It doesn't matter. Mulroney, Gretchen, Harper, Trudeau, we've pursued this agenda under every government. That's the truth that people need to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's a hard pill to swallow, isn't it, Frank? You really thought about it. You know, all
well, it destroys our prevailing motions. I mean, people are comfortable in their choices, whether you wear a red jersey or a blue jersey or even an orange jersey, God forbid. You're dedicated to realize that you're pursuing the exact same thing as your supposed enemy, to realize that the choice that you're making is no choice at all. Who wants to admit that? Because you're saying basically you got to start over. You got to start over from scratch. So who wants, you know, people don't want to work. It's a lot of work. It's not a popular
thing. The one question I did put to Maxine in one of my conversations with him was, would his party support recall legislation? And I am still waiting to hear his stance on that. That to me would be monumental if Canada actually had a mechanism right now available to us to remove this government from power, which we do not have right now under the current system. So that would speak volumes to me, and I haven't heard his reply to that question yet.
As I've said,
that's something I put to him, Frank. Just one of the questions I put to him. Go ahead.
First, that has to be the first and foremost thing out of the lips of any current politician that wants my vote. If you're not addressing recall legislation, you're not paying attention, and therefore you don't deserve to be my prime minister.
Well, I put the question.
I totally agree. It's one of my pets is this, not only recall legislation, but as I said, Senate reform, reforming the system.
A vote on non-conference binding.
Yeah, there's nothing in the PPC platform yet about that subject, but I think there should be something in there, and I am optimistic that there will be, because there's a lot there in the platform, but it's not complete by any stretch of the imagination, but it will be. And constitutional discussion about how this country works has to be first and foremost, in my opinion, and I share your opinion as well, because it's functionally broken. We have a false choice. We have a false dichotomy, and that false dichotomy gets absolute power, and we have no recourse. For 4 years, we just have to deal with these crooks.
I know.
That's not right.
We have nine hours of choice every four years, and it is such a deception in our lives. People think they have a choice. We have none. And boy, I'll tell you, if people have been told 3 years ago what Trudeau was ramming down our throats right now, you would have never seen him get into power. But you said our system is set up that the prime minister has just unbelievable power. I never realized that growing up in school. I always grew up thought that we had power, that we had some way of stopping what's going on in Ottawa right now. But really, our hands are tied in a lot of ways. Go ahead.
This is what scares me a lot, if I may interject here, is the power that the prime minister's office has. We have handed over power exponentially over the last number of decades. Various governments have just passed these edicts that have allowed the prime minister to take over power. That's why he can sit there with a smug look on his face. He knows he's untouchable. That we think that we still have the power in the House of Commons. Just watch question period. Do you think we have any power in the House of Commons anymore?
It's a
freaking joke. You can't get an answer. It shouldn't be called question period. It should be called answer period, because we need a freaking answer to these questions, not this blind rhetoric bullshit and double dealing and wheeling and talking about other bullshit. It's ridiculous. It has to stop, and you're right, Greg. It all has to change, all of it.
Yep.
And it's scripted. I mean, question period is the one outgrowth of representation we're supposed to have, this back and forth. But the entire thing is a scripted mess, and both parties are aware of what the other party's going to say and do. So it's all fake. It's all a charade. People say, Scheer stood up to Trudeau in question period today. It's like, no, he didn't. He read a freaking script, and then Trudeau read a script back. Yeah. Like, they didn't do anything. They just played a freaking game, and you people bought it. Give me a freaking break. It's not real. It's all charade. It's all illusion.
Absolutely.
Smoke and mirrors, man.
And they are paid exceptionally well to play this charade on us.
Yeah. They're professionals,
Frank. And you mentioned, I'm sorry, I gotta contradict the present company. You say there's no power to pull the prime minister down. You're absolutely wrong. And here's why you're wrong. There are people in this country who can pull the prime minister down. The Liberal Party of Canada, who none of you voted for. The people in that party, if they so choose, are the only people in this country who have the power to pull him down. And that's brutally unfair that a bunch of unelected donors in the back room, if they so decide, can pull his leadership from under him. Like, you know, and it doesn't take away from what you're saying. It's just, it's absurd that this unelected structure of a party of a bunch of the probably the most corrupted and crooked cronyism that's ever been foisted on a democracy since the dawn of time are the only people with the power of recourse against a prime minister. I mean, I'm getting a headache just thinking about it.
Yeah. Well, it's been set up to serve them, buddy. Over the years, it's been set up to serve them. And we have been watching hockey or playing football, anything to keep us distracted from looking at what's going on. Go ahead. That's one thing I talk about a lot. Buddy, go ahead.
I've been singing it for so long, attack the root core issues, not the systemic outcomes. You know, if we don't address these things and they're difficult to address, nothing's going to change. And when you've got a prime minister who's holding the power that threatens his people underneath of him to play ball, who's being told and dictated what to script from outside of the country, not by Canadians, not by Canadian aspirations, but by held national interests.
Yeah.
Those are the core issues. There's only one way to fix that. Recall legislation is where it starts. And then the disassociation, pending complete overhaul and reformation of the UN, or a complete or a complete pull out of that, too. I'll tell you, I don't give a rat's ass how much Canada owes China or Saudi or any of these people. If I was the prime minister today, I would completely tell everybody, you need to go lay down in the corner because we're done. We'll work out with you a fair and equitable absolution of our prior agreements, but they are null and void as of now. These are Canadian-owned things for Canadians' benefits. And if you don't like that, you're going to have to just kind of go in a corner and cry a bit, because it's just how it's going to be. Mm. And I will ally myself with other countries doing the same thing. And the outcome of that, well, it could be dicey, but it's going to inevitably be anyways.
It's going to be dicey.
You need to rip the Band-Aid off. Need to rip the Band-Aid off. Don't do this.
A financial discussion is one we could get to very deeply right now, because we know there's multiple factions affecting all economies worldwide now. But the bottom line is,
you bear. Jurgen knows this as well. This money thing is inflated and it's a mockery. It's not
real. Of course it is. It's not real.
We know. So guess
it's
what?
An illusion.
You're getting. Your debt isn't real either. You can take it and shove it.
Well, hey, I agree with you 100%. I mean, everything about our economies is an illusion. That the fact that people hold that much power over the world, the 7 or 8 families that control 60 or 70% of the wealth on the planet, hold that much control over the human race is an illusion. That if, sure, I'd love to be prime minister for a couple of weeks, I'd say, hey, all the deals are off. We'll pay you back, but this land is for Canada. But that's not what's happened in our country. And to fix that right now is going to take a monumental effort. That's all I'm saying. Go ahead.
It's what happened. It could happen. Come 2023, that will be the platform being screamed.
Jurgen, your thoughts? Because we're getting down to the last 9 minutes of the show here, guys. So did Jurgen leave? Did we lose him?
Jurgen there? Sir?
No, I don't see him
in
the
room.
We've lost him.
He's there.
What happened to Jurgen?
Oh. Okay, anyways, Frank, we're like I said, we're down about 8 minutes right now till the end of the show. And I knew this time was going to go really, really quick, because there's a lot of things that we still haven't even touched on today. But I know we've touched on a few. So,
yeah, until we, as you know, as we've been reiterating a little bit over here, is we have to address the systemic problems. We have to address the false dichotomy. We have to I use the word dichotomy because it's a much broader word than just mere choice. It suggests a depth of choice, which we don't have. We do not have a depth of choice. We're on a highway and we're headed in one direction, and every 4 years we get to pick which lane we want to drive in. But we don't ever get to pick an off ramp, and we don't ever get to pick the other side of the highway. And what Gary's talking about moving into 2023, this is a process. Regardless of what happens in 2019, this is a process that's going to carry on for a lot of years. It's not, there's no quick fix. We have to first create the choice, and then we have to take the choice. And in the creation of that choice, it could evolve 100 different ways. It might, what we come into the future with might not be what's here today. I mean, for instance, people who start revolutions rarely survive to see the end of those revolutions. Yeah. It's a rare soul indeed. The Talleyrands and Talleyrand was, he worked for Napoleon and he worked for kings and queens and he survived governments. Those are rarities. So it could take a lot of forms before we get there.
It's a growing curve for sure. Jürgen, you're back with us or did you leave again? I seen him up there on the screen. And
we lost him again.
So I think we lost him again. Gary, just speak for a couple minutes before we shut this show down.
Well, all I can say is that with all the problems that we've focused on, you know, the solutions are there. They always have been there. They're a lot simpler than we make them out to be. And a lot of it comes back to this idea that somehow we got to be polite and nice and civil and this and that. And it's not. None of this is civil. Believe me, the people that are pulling the strings, they are not civil. They are not nice. I don't care how much it's
Canadians somebody's sketching in the background.
Canadians will have to realize that all those things they say to each other are the exact same things they're going to have to say on the political spectrum. And when that choice is taken, when that choice is offered, you're going to have to grab it. It's that simple. If you don't grab it when you're given the choice, when you're given the chance, you absolutely have nothing to say. So when these things come about, don't question it as much and try to do all these other external things. Look at it. Is it good for Canada? Then jump on it. If it's not, then reject it and be firm in that. Mm. Don't debate it and argue back and forth and try to think of, well, if we only did this, that's not the choice is off. Take a choice that's going to be beneficial. That's it. That's it.
Well said. Hey, Jürgen, are you back with us? Your microphone is muted. And Jürgen isn't unmuting his microphone. Well said, Gary, and it was a pleasure having you in today and always a pleasure talking to you. And people that haven't looked at since it's a social, I urge you to go on their sites, and they have a Canadian edition, an international edition, a United States edition. And I really like what they're doing over there, so please take a look and support Gary and his guys and what they're trying to do. Frank, always a pleasure having you in, my friend. One last word for you, and then I'm going to close the show up with a few thoughts of my own.
Yeah, you mentioned Synthesis Social. I'm going to try and push out a video tomorrow. I've had a lot of technical issues. I've updated people as to what's been going on behind the scenes, and I'm working out. I hope to get something out about it tomorrow, because I would hope it's Synthesis, but it could be something else. But we have got to challenge this monopoly on social media and on the free interchange of ideas. We need a platform that's easy to use, that doesn't force people out of their comfort zone of habit, because habit is a huge, it's huge. If you're forcing people to change their habits, nothing will ever work. The nice thing about Synthesis is it's comfortable. It's easy to slip into. And any solution that's actually going to enable free speech and actually free things up is going to have to be easy to slip into, that doesn't force you to change your habits. So I think it's important. So that's kind of where I'm at. And moving forward.
What happened there? We lost him. Yeah, I just lost Frank. We dropped him on the call. I don't know what's going on there.
It wasn't me.
Well, thank you for having me, Gary.
Yeah, no problem, Gary. And listen, like I said, what you're doing, I applaud. And what Frank was saying is absolutely spot on, that we know that our privacy is completely under attack through the established media connections we're using currently. And I ask everybody to get out and have a real good look at Synthesis. It's a platform, is really designed well. It's really set up well, so it's easy to use. And there's so many things over there that I haven't even looked at, and options that it just absolutely blows my mind. So kudos to you, Gary, and well done. And I'm looking forward to tomorrow. Are you back with us? Last stop for me before we start the show. Yeah, we can hear you, Jürgen.
All right, yeah, I'm back.
We got a couple minutes left.
Sorry, I'd like to support what Gary is doing. Everybody will hook onto Synthesis Social. I think it's an amazing thing. Thanks a lot for having me on today, Barry. I really appreciate it. I appreciate the fact that we can get together from all parts of this country and have a decent conversation and move the conversation forward in a positive fashion. I think it's so important. We all discuss that. To be able to pull it off like we do in a format like this is very important. Let's continue on. We have to carry on, guys. Good job by all of you. Thanks for all you do for Canadians.
Thank you again, Jürgen. Always a pleasure having you on, my friend. And, you know, there's an old saying that silence is consent. And never before in history, I believe, is that more relevant right now to what we see going on in our country. We cannot be silent. That it is your duty, civically, morally, however you want to describe it, it is your duty to get involved. Because if you don't, folks, our country's going to change. And it is going to change in a way that I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. And I don't say that lightly. I honestly don't say that lightly. Yeah. Anyways, today has been an awesome show. I've really enjoyed the conversation. I love being able to get people together and share different views on things. Even though some of us aren't going to agree on a few things, I think we're basically all here on the exact same page. And I love being able to get people's opinions out there for other people to hear. We really need people to get involved. And I think you've heard the urgency in that, in our voices, in our conversation today. So thanks for joining in. Thanks again to my guests. And I'll be back next week, same time, same place. God bless you all and have a very, very, very good New Year's. Bye for now.